This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR from the campus of Michigan State University. Here's Michigan State University President Luana Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis with Judd Heathcote.
It's our pleasure today to officially welcome Judd Heathcote to the program. It really is an honor, Judd, and you are one of the very special individuals from Michigan State, and Roy and I are really delighted to call you our friend as well. And seriously, we want to welcome you, and we're going to give Mark the first question, because when he was your student manager, he never got a word in edgewise.
Well, he never got the towels picked up, but, you know, I always kind of did it myself and excused him.
Since you turned the reins over to Coach Izzo, as you sit back and look at the game of college basketball, what would you say are some of the things that have improved and some of the things that have detracted from the college basketball game?
Well, I'd say the players now are more ready to play earlier. You get so many freshmen that have been through the AAU, played all summer, lifted weights, they're stronger. But the game itself is, in my opinion, no better. You don't see many jump shots off the dribble. You don't see clubs that pass maybe as well as the old clubs did, but the players are more athletic, and so they do things that the players back in my day couldn't do.
When you think about the way in which you developed young people, and we'll put all those student managers like Mark on the list, what advice would you give to coaches today about how they need to really care for not simply student athletes, but all the people who are part of a basketball team to make sure that young men in particular have the opportunity to grow and develop like Mark has?
The coaching now, you're kind of a surrogate father to so many kids that grow up in broken homes. I think it's very important that you get involved with the players off the court as well as on the court. And I think Tom does an excellent job of that. He has a hand in most of the things that the kids do. But, you know, you can't watch 15 kids 24 hours a day. I still remember when Tom called Nick Saban and they were having some problems. He says, "Nick, do you have problems?" He says, "Tom, I spend more time on off-field problems than I do coaching." And Tom felt better after hearing that.
I think some of the things that I've walked away with, Coach, is people ask the impact that you've had and on my life personally. And going through and having the opportunity to get a degree from Michigan State was enhanced greatly by being mentored under you. And the one thing that I really pushed to the forefront is my anticipation for variables that can impact almost anything that happens as an AD. And because of you, and because of trying to stay one step ahead of you, which was nearly impossible, I would try to think of the 50 things you may ask. And I'd normally get 50 covered, but you'd come up with 51 and create another challenge to be better the next time. And I can't tell you the impact that that's had on the ability for me to do a job coming through the business, being an athletic director, to take the work ethic that really blossomed from my perspective by trying to be the best employee, the best basketball manager, to try and make your life easier by anticipating where you were headed with the next decision or the next process. So I'm very grateful for that. And this is the point where you tell a joke and rip me.
I was just going to say, hey, don't blame me for your career. It wasn't my fault you made all those mistakes. But you were always the best, Mark, and I still remember when I called Joe Kearney to put in a recommendation for you for that first job, and I told him all the things you did and all the things you could do, and I think he hired you in spite of my recommendation, but you've proved yourself through the years, and you're still doing it. So don't give me a lot of credit. Give yourself credit.
Well, Judd, if you were a sort of czar of college basketball, are there any changes you would make in rules or the way that the game is has been developed in order to make it a better game from your perspective?
Well, you know, it's ironic that I pick up our paper, Spokesman Review, today, and there's Tom's picture. And he says, I don't teach it, I don't like it, I hate it. And he's talking about the flopping that kids do. So there's one thing that I think they're working hard on is, you know, do away with the fake falls. I claim that Bobby Knight at Indiana was the best at that. You just breathe on one of his guys and they'd fall backward, and then he'd chew the officials for not calling it a foul. But there are some things that I think would be good for basketball. I think you still have to have a great feeling for the educational part. I know you want me to say this, Luana. If you don't help the kids graduate, you're not doing your job. And I don't think there's as much emphasis on that as there used to be. There are too many the one-and-dones and the let's play a year, 2 years, and get to the pros. I think there's too much of that going on in kids' minds in basketball these days.
You know, Judd, I would agree with you. Irvin obviously was a very special player and ends up being one of the greatest players in the NBA. But is a lifelong learner. Even though he may not do it in a formal way, he really has a passion for learning, a passion for understanding. But there are a lot of people who believe they will be that best ever player in the NBA and have no chance to do that, and they're left with nothing.
Well, I always say that Magic Johnson is the best guard in the history of basketball. I say Michael Jordan is the best player. And then Kareem must have been the best hook shooter. But you look at LeBron James now and you wonder if he's going to race all of those guys. But Magic was special. I used to tell everyone that he was the best player I ever coached, but the best player to coach I ever coached. He had an unbelievable basketball IQ. We'd run through an intricate play and once. And we go through it the second time, and he's telling J.J., no, you're the third option. You come around this double screen. Ron, you go here. And he's just like a coach on the floor, and he never changed. And he's still, I think, a great ambassador for Michigan State, as I'm sure you'd agree. And I'm just proud that I had the opportunity to associate with him for 2 years. I tell everyone that Magic was so unappreciative to what I did for him that he left after 2 years. But, it was time to go, and he proved that he was as good as there was in the pro ranks.
Well, Coach, we sure do appreciate you joining us today. I think it's probably time for you to go back and get another bag of ice and take care of that backside.
We're sorry we're going to miss you over the weekend. We're looking forward to seeing you.
Well, yeah, I was looking forward to seeing all the players and the coaches and so on. And then they told me that I was going to coach one team with Herb Williams, and the other bench was going to be Gus Kanakis and Bruce Fossum. And I said, well, those guys will have to call me kid. So, hey, keep the university going on the straight and narrow like you're doing, and congratulations on a great job, both of you.
Well, and you take care of yourself. We hope to see you soon.
Okay, thanks, Luana.
Bye. Thanks, Coach Heathcote.
Bye, Mark. Bye.
That was legendary Spartan basketball coach Judd Heathcote talking with Spartans athletic director Mark Hollis and Michigan State University president Luana Simon. To hear the conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com. Up next, Dr. Kirk Heinze with Governor Snyder's Senior Advisor on Energy and Environmental Issues, Valerie Brader.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman for the MSU Alumni Association. Join the MSUAA family, and you're instantly connected to our network of over 500,000 Spartans in every corner of the world. Whether it's community, connections, career growth, or class, that's what the MSU Alumni Association is all about. Join the world's largest Spartan Nation community at alumni.msu.edu. That's alumni.msu.edu. The MSU Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome back to Greening in the Great Lakes, Valerie Brader. Valerie is the Deputy Legal Counsel and Senior Policy Advisor to Governor Snyder. A few weeks ago, Governor Snyder delivered a special message on energy and the environment, a message that Valerie had a great deal to do with drafting. Valerie, welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks for having us. This is a priority heading into next year for us, so it's an exciting chance to be able to talk about it with your listeners.
Let's start with energy and the pillars that sort of underscore the whole report.
Well, he really was talking for both energy and the environment with one foundational principle, and that's adaptability. His focus is not try to pick the future and design your policies toward that future, but actually pick policies that will end up being good decisions in a variety of possible futures. Mm-hmm. And that's true in both areas. So that's the foundation on which you build. And then in the energy arena, the three pillars that he really is focusing on are excellent reliability, affordability of energy, and protection of the environment. And any decision that he's making, he's really weighing on those three pillars.
And we've had a lot of folks talking about energy on the program, and those pillars, we hear those from in various ways, different semantics, but you've got to have reliable energy. Consumers want affordable energy, and it's all about protecting the environment these days.
Right. And his idea is to look for policies that really make sure all three of those are guiding them, because if you do that, you're going to end up with policies that are good no matter what the future is going to hold.
Well, let's talk about some of these policies. And I know that this was an overview and a lot of initiatives were identified. There's a lot more to come. But let's talk about the idea of a strategic natural gas reserve, which I thought was one of the real salient ideas that came out of the report.
Well, when we looked at it, we found out that the state owns storage from natural gas and leases that out to people through an auction system. But we also, of course, have natural gas underneath some of our state lands, and we have a royalty program where we can either take whatever you get on the spot market that day when you produce the gas, or we could take the gas itself. Now, in the past, we've always gone ahead and just taken the royalty, the money, and leased out our storage. But when you own the gas and when you own the storage, there's a good question about whether you should be maybe holding that gas, storing it in your own resources, and then looking at a long-term contract so you can help shave off those high peaks that our consumers pay, especially in the winter months, by having sort of that long-term. That way the state might get more revenue that goes to our public lands and parks. The consumers get a better natural gas price. And just overall, you also have opportunities with public-private partnerships to look at maybe expanding that kind of idea. So it was a way to look at the resources the state already has and get a win-win for both taxpayers and ratepayers.
You know, on the surface, that sounds really like a great idea, particularly the public-private partnership. But one might ask, if you're going to have a natural gas reserve, then someone has to be pretty astute at predicting the market. I mean, essentially, the government is getting in the buying and selling of natural gas business.
Well, the government's already in the natural gas buying and selling business. What we've chosen to do is be a seller on the spot market and then lease our storage. So it's not as if we're going into an area that we haven't been in before. The question is just, well, we know right now, especially the spot market is very low and storage prices are very low. So we know we're not getting a lot from it right now. So the question is simply, could we be smarter about managing our resources? And we're pulling together experts from our Public Service Commission, as well as the folks who know the gas production side, to be able to flesh out whether this really will give us a better return, as well as provide these opportunities. So yes, we do have to kind of be savvier about the business, but it's really being savvier about the business we're already in.
As long as we're on natural gas, Valerie, you did mention hydraulic fracturing in the report. Mm-hmm. It's much in the news. Michigan has had a great success rate in monitoring. We've been doing fracturing, I don't need to tell you this, for 50 or 60 years. It's the horizontal fracturing that's fairly new, and the fact that these wells can now horizontally go out as much as a mile or two on either side of the wellhead. Are you convinced, and the governor convinced, that can be monitored as well as the traditional vertical fracturing?
Yeah, we think it's definitely possible to do that quite safely. It is newer in that we've only been doing it for about a decade in Michigan.
Okay.
But again, in that decade, have not had significant problems. In fact, have not had any water quality contamination of any kind from it. And you know, the most dangerous part of drilling a well is still that vertical drill and making sure that you keep the pressure tight. And that's something we have a long history and a great success in doing much better than some other states.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in good for Michigan, unfortunate for them. And we also have the water withdrawal statute, and our oil and gas producers do have to make sure that their water withdrawals that they use for fracking will not cause ecological harm.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're better prepared than a lot of other states to do this safely. We have the track record of being able to do it safely, and we're really excited to be able to work with the University of Michigan Graham Institute of Sustainability, which is doing an assessment of fracking with a lot of experts in different areas. And we're working with them. They have environmental groups, they have industry groups, and of course, obviously academic experts. And so we think that'll help inform both the policymakers and the public about how to approach this new technology, new in quotes.
New in quote for the last decade.
Yeah.
My guest is Valerie Brader. She's the Deputy Legal Counsel and Senior Policy Advisor to Governor Snyder. Recently very much involved in the draft of a special message from Governor Snyder, ensuring our future, energy, and the environment. Valerie, we've talked a little bit about natural gas and fracking. We do have a problem with the tale of two peninsulas, and it has to do with transmission infrastructure. What is the problem?
Well, the problem is that the electrical superhighway, so to speak, that really gets power moved over long distances in the Upper Peninsula is not as robust as it needs to be. They have 12 yellow alerts a year for Star Trek fans. It's exactly what you'd think. Caution, things are about to go really wrong,
yeah,
potentially. And it essentially means if one more thing goes wrong, people lose power for many, many hours and even days, and large areas do. And that's very different from what happens in the Lower Peninsula, where we have really excellent reliability and don't face those kind of hazards, frankly. Mm-hmm. And so what the governor is looking to do is in the short term solve that reliability crisis in the UP, but then also look at long-term ways that we can better connect so we're no longer a tale of two peninsulas and really make sure that people in both areas have access to the supply and the reliability of power that really makes the economy grow.
The governor also addressed in that special message the lack of a national energy policy. This is old news. We have a renewable portfolio standard that he says, let's see what is, we're going to make the 10% by 2015. Before we project out any further than that, let's see. I guess the question one might ask, the federal government may never have a national energy policy. But why wait, I guess, for the federal government to see if they can get its act together before we take a look at some of the maybe different renewable portfolio standards?
Well, we're not simply waiting. You know, part of the message was to say in 2013, he's starting an information gathering process led by the Michigan Energy Office, which is in our Economic Development Corporation, and the Public Service Commission chair, to really say, let's do a pure factual, not pushing one agenda, not designed to go one way, a purely factual report on renewables and efficiency, our electric market system, and other topics that people think we ought to be looking at. Ask the public, what do you need to know? Ask the legislators, what do you need to know to make good decisions? And that process will be complete with the reports that, again, are factual in nature by the end of 2013. At that point, the governor will be ready to say what our targets ought to be in his view and our overall energy policy, how that fits together. But why it's so important to also get a little bit of time to see what the federal government's doing is that right now the EPA coal rules are really coming into effect. And within the next year or two, we will know what kind of reliability challenges those will provide for the Midwest and whether the coal plants in Michigan that have announced shutdowns will be allowed to shut down. And so while, yeah, you don't wait forever for the federal government to move, there is some value right now in getting that extra year to find out whether the plan that appears to be in place for Michigan's future energy portfolio will be allowed to remain in place given the reliability concerns that the federal government policies have created.
I think it's important to note the governor has been a fan of renewable energy, but he's going to do it in an economically viable and prudent way. He's not going to be steamrolled into creating portfolio standards that we can't achieve.
Well, and he also really wants to make sure that we look at efficiency at the same time, because the most environmentally friendly policy is not to need the energy at all, not to have to build anything. And so if you look at renewables and you're not thinking about efficiency at the same time and how those can interact, you're really missing one of the best environmental opportunities the state can have.
My guest is Valerie Brader. She's the Deputy Legal Counsel and Senior Policy Advisor to Governor Snyder. Let's turn to the environment here and that part, because that was a major part of the message as well. A lot of different things. Let's talk about rebalancing Michigan's land portfolio for starters.
Sure. This is something that the Department of Natural Resources is vigorously engaged in right now. We basically came up with a public lands portfolio in both our rural and our urban areas that's more based on what got foreclosed and ended up in government hands than it was an actual plan. This is what we should own. This is why. The governor wants to take a step back, really look and say, there are lots of services we get from our public lands, from the ecosystem support it provides to the recreational opportunities it provides to the other, you know, natural resources we get from it, timber, minerals, et cetera. Why don't we actually think about all the services we want? Look at our portfolio and see what supports those services. And if we've got stuff that isn't supporting things we want, let's not burden our ability to care for the other lands by having that. And then if there are some holes, there are things we really want that we don't have the lands to support, then let's prioritize acquisition of that type of property. So he's really looking at trying to rebalance that and looking at it not just as a rural question, but also our urban lands, where we're seeing a lot more government ownership due to the foreclosure and tax crises, especially in many of our urban cores, and make sure that we're not just creating the same issue that we have now where we didn't really have a plan about why we own what we own. Let's make sure that in both contexts, we've got a plan, we've thought about it, and we know what services we want to see.
And the net result, because the state has been criticized for owning too much real estate, maybe on net it'll own less, but what will be owned will be strategically owned.
Correct. And we're not saying that it'll come out as saying own less or own more.
Right.
We're
we
saying,
don't know at this point.
Why don't we actually, for the first time, really take a look and build it from what we want out, not from what we have in.
Valerie, one thing I did want to talk about, because it was a particular area of the report that a lot of people got excited about, and that was linking all of these great trails that we have. I'm a big fan of the TART trails up in the Traverse City area. I use them all the time. But the idea of linking all of these wonderful assets is really, I think, one of the highlights of the report.
We were really excited about not just the idea itself, but the reception it got. If you looked, we found that we had all but about 200 miles of a 900-mile trail that could stretch from Belle Isle in Detroit to the border of Wisconsin in the UP, you know, just that bridge in the middle. And it's really what's amazing about those linkages is it's not just all stuff the state owns. There are private trails that had been maintained by Boy Scout troops in some cases, by individuals and others. And it really shows how much Michiganders love the outdoors, love their trails. And if you can getting just those few last stretches done, create that kind of signature trail for Michigan, it really helps us market ourselves as the trail state, which we already are pretty far on the way to being. And we just really need a signature trail to get that message out to the public at large.
And some of the things in the message are long term, but this sounds, to me anyway, a bit like low-hanging fruit, which is something that the DNR, I suspect, could get moving on. Our good friend Keith Cray could get moving on pretty quickly.
Yeah, Keith, like the governor, moves in dog years. So we'll be working on that. And there will probably be some stretches that are challenges, but we're going to get as much done as we can as soon as we can. can. We've already got various people telling us they want to be the first to walk. So, like I said, we've got most of the miles there. So you can already start walking the trail.
That's right.
And then just wait for us to make those last few connections.
Well, that's wonderful. We've got a couple minutes left here. I do want to talk about an area that's near and dear to my heart, and that's right to farm in urban areas. There have been some recent developments, Hance Farms in Detroit, et cetera. A lot of excitement in Flint, Detroit, and other areas about that. But there have been some policy and legal issues with respect to farming in the city versus farming in the country. There was an attempt here to sort of bridge that gap.
Yes, the governor basically said, we've been studying this a long time. We know the issues. And this coming year, we have to have a solution. There's no question that we need to protect the right of our farmers to continue the businesses that are so vital to Michigan's economy and their communities, and protect them against encroachment by others. But nobody ever expected the same kind of availability of land in our urban cores as we have now to really enhance the green atmosphere of the cities, the jobs there, the access to food, all of those things. And so the governor basically said, enough talking about it. You'll be seeing a solution come this year.
I've been talking with Valerie Brader, Deputy Legal Counsel and Senior Policy Advisor to Governor Snyder. The special message was ensuring our future energy and the environment. Thanks so much, Valerie.
Thank you.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Find more online at greeningofthegreatlakes.com.
The Michigan State University Department of Radiology is a leader in MRI, imaging research, and patient care. From world-class research to state-of-the-art patient care, we're providing outstanding diagnostic imaging technology. We're also a leader in sports medicine, delivering quality care to athletes and sports participants of all ages. Visit us online at rad.msu.edu and see how we are boldly designing the future.
MSU.
Our mission is to be your personal network for life.
Scott Westerman leads the Michigan State University Alumni Association.
Sing our love for alma mater.
So what that means is when you graduate from college, we'll help you find your first career. When you move to any city, anywhere, we'll help you connect and settle. If you're mid-career and want to reinvent yourself, we'll help you find a new passion. And if you need advice or a friend anywhere in the world, the MSU Alumni Association will connect you with the 500,000 Spartans out there that are always ready to take your call.
Join the Michigan State University Alumni Association online at alumni.msu.edu.
And thy praises
alumni.msu.edu.
This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, it's always great to welcome back to the show a frequent guest, the always upbeat Jennifer Battle, who is the Director of Campus Sustainability at Michigan State University. And this time we're going to talk about MSU's recently released Environmental Stewardship Report for 2012. That's a long title, but we'll boil it down for our listeners. Good to see you again, Jennifer, and Happy New Year.
Great to see you, Kirk. Happy New Year to you, too.
The Environmental Stewardship Report for 2012, Be Spartan Green. How is MSU doing? How did we do in 2012? We make some progress?
I think we absolutely made some progress. You know, we're certainly not perfect, but there are a lot of really great things to be proud of. Recently, in April, we passed the Energy Transition Plan, which set some long-range energy goals for the campus. We've made progress in reducing our waste to landfill. We've gone down the path of looking at some initiatives in supply chain and water, and we're continuing to work on the transportation front while still engaging the students and staff and faculty on campus in these efforts. So I think we're doing quite well. We're definitely talking about some of our efforts beyond campus, so we're working with a lot of other institutions around the Big Ten and around the country. So I think MSU has a lot to be proud of in this area.
Yes, there's M Planet Blue, there's B Spartan Green, a lot of folks. One thing that I've always liked about Michigan State's plan, though, is that we're just not tossing the green word around. I mean, this is a long-term, carefully thought-out planning process that looks at all the dimensions of costs, of environmental impact, et cetera. This is not simply the phenomenon of the times.
Sure. I mean, we really wanted to put our efforts behind what we were talking about instead of just talking about something and not doing it. And I think that's the energy plan is a really great example of that. Recently, not only did we set the goals, but we have actually reduced our greenhouse gas emissions by about 14%. And this is as of the last fiscal year, which ended in June. And we were steadily increasing our renewable energy options for campus. The new geothermal center is up and running in the Bott building. We're excited about that. And the board also this past spring approved the anaerobic digester, which will provide biogas for campus. So that's another renewable energy resource. And at the same time, we have studies going on for large-scale solar. So this is an area that we're really putting our efforts behind. It's not just a plan. It's not just a statement. It's something that we're going to be persistent with and really make good decisions for our campus.
You know, energy is the one that's in the news, and that's the one that students seem to be most interested in. One thing that's sort of a positive, I know the long-term plan is to get off fossil fuels entirely, but this natural gas phenomenon that's going on is going to provide a nice bridge between our historic use of coal and the movement to the renewables.
Absolutely. I mean, we've certainly done a lot of fuel switching, which has helped us in our greenhouse gas emission reductions. And I think we've moved from using just a small portion of natural gas to using almost 2/3 natural gas. And that number will increase as time goes on, you know, as long as economic factors are in our favor. But there's certainly a lot of areas, not just energy, but very proud of our efforts in the waste reduction. And that not only includes recycling center and the surplus store, which have really expanded the efforts, expanded the drop-off, expanded the community reuse days and those types of things, but also in the efforts from the supply chain and reducing the amount of unnecessary products that come into campus. Really excited to work with our faculty. We have the top supply chain program in the country, and we've been utilizing their expertise in helping us achieve some of our campus goals.
Yeah, I can speak firsthand. I'm a frequent user of the recycling center over there a couple times a month. The last time I was there, every time I'm there, it seems like there are more and more people. It's almost like the recycling is going to have to be expanded at some point because, again, it's drawing folks from, you know, 30 to 40 miles away.
Yeah, it's very exciting, and they actually expanded much sooner originally than they'd planned, and I'm not sure when another expansion might be in the works, but the other great thing is the utilization of the surplus store, which is really where we want people to go. I mean, it's great. First, you want to reduce the amount of products you're consuming, but if you have to consume something, the great thing to do is reuse it. And I know that there are a lot of community members and businesses, and even myself, I bought my own hybrid from the surplus store. So there's a lot of great things happening at surplus too. And then when you couple that with the recycling, there's just so many great opportunities to reduce waste.
My guest is Jennifer Battle, who's the director of campus sustainability at Michigan State University. You talked about reuse and this whole idea of cradle to cradle, which we've talked about on this program. But in that supply chain, looking at green vendors, looking at reusing, looking at putting products that have been used back into the supply chain, all of the above, right?
Absolutely. And some of the more exciting work that we're doing now, and I want to give credit to our university services group, is they're working very closely with vendors and suppliers. We had our first conference where we brought in a lot of our supplier partners to talk about where we wanted to go in the future and to engage them in the conversation so that as we move forward and think about different ways of purchasing and different ways of looking at our suppliers, we want to be inclusive and include them in the conversation. This year, we'll expand it to more suppliers and students and more faculty because students are really going to be a huge part. I mean, again, we're a university, so we want to be modeling what we're talking about and also teaching our students these environmentally and sustainable behaviors.
And students are big fans of buying locally as part of that supply chain procurement.
Absolutely. In fact, RHS, Residential and Hospitality Services, has this year just put a new food truck on campus, which features a lot of local food. So there's a lot of local procurement for food. It's very popular in the residence halls. And again, I just want to stress how great students have been. They've been great partners. We've put together some engagement grants for them so that they can, too, research some of these issues and work with faculty and staff in solving the problems for tomorrow.
Jennifer, another area in the report that's highlighted is water, water consumption, water use. Michigan State is ramping up all across the spectrum on water with research and outreach, et cetera, our Great Lakes. But right here on campus, just beginning to get this rolling. But what are some of the key initiatives related to water?
Well, water is a newer area for us, as you've mentioned. And the first thing we started to do was just to do a general water audit to see what are we consuming, where is it going, and who's using it. And from there, certain units have already started to identify water conservation efforts in the residence halls. When they're remodeling, they're using low-flow shower heads and low-flow water fixtures there. And the physical plan has also identified some additional changes in other buildings. But I think what we'll continue to do is look at the water audit, look at our entire water system. And right now we're trying to find where's the biggest bang for the buck. And so there's a lot of background that needs to happen, a lot of research, but then we're going to move into some action steps probably within the next year or so.
And another big area where students have an interest in, I mean, you mentioned water these days, water, energy, how those two link together. I mean, that is huge on the environmental front.
Absolutely, because when you move around water, when you use water, you're using energy. So any kind of gains in water conservation should help us out on the energy side, too. Plus, water is such an important resource, and we forget about that being in an abundant Great Lakes state, but it doesn't mean that we have any less responsibility to conserve and really use our resources efficiently and conserve.
Jennifer, we've got about a minute left, but I do want to mention because it's so important, and it's so MSU, given our tradition of land grant, but the engagement part of the report, the outreach to the community. We're not just doing this on campus. We're doing this in the context of a much broader community.
Absolutely. I mean, that is part of our core value, and of course we want to walk the talk and do what we're talking about on campus, but the opportunity just to share with our Big Ten peers, with people around the country, with our suppliers, particularly with our students, are very, very important. We get a lot of great ideas from the outside, and we hope that we're also sharing some of our successes with other institutions. So we are members and very active in our Big Ten and Friends Environmental Stewardship Group. I'd mentioned the supplier conference we'd hosted. And again, the students are really our best product from Michigan State University. So in engaging them and getting them excited and having them challenge us and put forth alternative solutions, I think that's really the best piece of outreach that we can have at MSU.
Can't tell you how many young entrepreneurs we've talked to on this program over the last 3 or 4 years who've come out of Michigan State with this sort of environmental sensitivity and have developed businesses based on that passion. The outreach, the ripple effect of this is unbelievable.
It's great. I mean, I talk to a lot of students all the time who are either getting ready to graduate or recent grads, and they come back with ideas, and they come back to campus, they come back as speakers. We're really proud of our alums. Our Spartans are doing some great things in a lot of places, and I just hope that the efforts that we have on campus will continue to foster that learning so that we really are not only walking the talk here, but producing Spartans and efforts and initiatives that really have an effect on the rest of the world.
Well, it's a very readable report. It's beautifully laid out. It's nicely written. It's called Environmental Stewardship Report for 2012, MSU's Environmental Stewardship Report for 2012. And they can just Google that. It's a PDF file that's easily downloadable. I've been talking with Jennifer Battle. Jennifer is the Director of Campus Sustainability at Michigan State University. Jennifer, always great to have you on the program.
Great. Thank you very much.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Find more online at greeningofthegreatlakes.com.
MSU Ag Bio Research, leading innovation in food, natural resources, and energy.
We're the face of MSU across the state, with infrastructure and research expertise to address those local problems.
Dr. Steve Pepke leads MSU Ag Bio Research.
MSU Ag Bio Research is the research engine that undergirds the food and agricultural industry in the state.
MSU Ag Bio Research.
This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
My next guest is Julie Mehdi Bennett, who's a Senior Vice President for Public Sector Consultants, which is based in Lansing. And among other hats she wears, many hats she wears, she serves as the Executive Director of Michigan Saves. Michigan Saves is a nonprofit organization that provides financing for energy efficiency and renewable energy improvements. And she's here to tell us about a newly launched program under the aegis of Michigan Saves, one that focuses on Michigan businesses. Julie, welcome to the program.
Great. Thanks for having me. Love your show.
Tell us a little bit about Michigan Saves for our listeners who may not be aware of it.
Sure. As you said, Michigan Saves is a nonprofit organization. We're dedicated to making energy improvements easy and affordable for Michigan energy consumers. We do that by offering affordable financing to make the improvements. We also offer rebates and other incentives to make the improvements affordable. We also work with a network of Michigan authorized contractors across the state. We have more than 300 contractors, so we're really trying to drive business for them as well. And we have programs for homeowners and, as you said, a new program for business owners.
Okay, so I'm a homeowner, and I want to do some improvements. Maybe I want to put better windows in my home or better insulation or maybe even solar panels. What do I do?
What do you do? Well, we want to make it really easy and really affordable for you. So we've been able to help more than 2,000 homeowners across the state. The loans are very affordable and easy to access to be able to finance the improvements. For that program, we are using a network of credit unions, local credit unions across the state. They make the process really, really easy. You work with one of our 300 contractors across the state. They identify what you can do to save money on your utility bill. It's as easy as 1, 2, 3, really. And as a result, from these 2,000 homeowners are saving on average about $450 a year in utility bill savings. So that's real money that's going back into Michigan's economy. It's a great thing.
So the thing that you said about this list of contractors, because sometimes you might have had a roof done 10 years ago, so you call the roofer and you say, you know, I'm interested in looking at some solar capabilities, and they say, we don't do solar. But you have these contractors who do.
Yes. You go to our website, MichiganSaves.org. You can plug in your zip code, your county, and up will pop a number of contractors in your local area. You just give them a call and they'll be happy to help you.
And you're monitoring, so you're monitoring these contractors. You know that they're capable of doing this, and that they do good work, and that they're up on the latest technology.
That's right. On the front end, we have a number of requirements they need to meet to become authorized. We train them on how to offer the financing, so it's really easy. And then on the back end, we do quality assurance to make sure the jobs were done right.
Now, in Northville at Heller's Market, back in December, a new program for Michigan Saves is called Business Energy Financing Program. Tell us about that.
That's right. We launched the program a couple of weeks ago with the help of Governor Snyder at Hiller's Market. And this program is really about helping businesses reduce costs by allowing them to access easy, affordable financing. In this case, it's provided by Irvin Leasing and the Bank of Ann Arbor, another local lender. And they're able to really reduce costs on their utility bills, money that they're able to use to then hire more workers or expand operations, really driving Michigan's economy. It's a great program.
The energy conservation phase sometimes, or dimension, gets lost in the shuffle. Your program really hits on the conservation.
That's right. That's right. And the Governor Snyder and his administration has been really supportive of our program because it's helping. It's just a win-win-win. It's helping create jobs for local contractors in Michigan. It's helping create customers for local lenders. And it's helping businesses and homeowners save money that they can then in turn drive, you know, put into Michigan's economy. So, and then there's, you know, the green gain where we're helping green Michigan's economy. So it's a win-win-win-win-win.
Well, it's alternative energy, it's new technologies, but it's also conserving what we have and reusing what we have,
right,
et cetera.
Yes.
What are some types of improvements for these businesses that qualify for your loans, for
sure.
example?
Sure. It's a number of things that really help spruce up a business. It's replacing equipment, refrigeration equipment. It's improving heating and cooling systems. systems. It's improving lighting. You can put in LED lighting, outdoor lighting, a number of things that are going to help spruce up the business, but also really lower utility bills overall. In Hiller's Market, for example, they, in their one store, and they have many stores, in this one store where we launched the program, they're going to save $25,000 a year on their utility bill. So that's real money for
that's
that business. Yes.
Yeah, that is significant.
It is.
My guest is Julie Mehdi Bennett, who's the Senior Vice President for Public Sector Consultants. She's also the Executive Director of Michigan Saves. So I'm a business, and I'm interested in doing some of these things. Is it as easy for me to apply for these loans as it is for homeowners? And I got another question after that.
Yes, it is. In our mission statement, easy and affordable is what we're after. So we work with the lenders to really streamline that loan application process. We train the contractors so they know exactly how to access the financing and really hold the business owner and the homeowner's hand, depending on which program they're going through. So it's just couldn't be easier.
Now, one question that occurs to me, because I drive a Chevy Volt, for example, and I've done, there are federal and other rebates for doing these things as well. Does Michigan Saves interface with some of those types of things as well?
Yes, that goes along with our easy mission. There can be a lot of confusion in the marketplace because it's a great problem to have. There are so many incentives,
right,
not just from the federal government, but from utilities in the state. And so we really work to know what rebates are out there, what programs are available, to inform our contractors about that so that you can marry the rebates with our financing and get the best deal possible.
Julie, I know you want to mention some of your partners who've involved in this effort. I mean, you started in 2009 with a lot of help from the Michigan Public Services Commission. Who are some of the other partners that help with this program?
That's right. We can't say enough about the Michigan Public Service Commission. This was their brainchild. They really wanted a program like this to reduce that first cost barrier, because in the end, you always save money by making these improvements. But a lot of times, the cost is really high up front. It'll pay for itself over time,
absolutely,
but you need to get over that cost hurdle. So that was their idea. Also, the Michigan Energy Office and in the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, they have been amazing partners. We've been able to secure $35 million in federal grants as a
wow.
result of our partnership with them. So another way that we're making this affordable is because we're using these grant dollars to be able to get lower interest rates from the lenders and also provide direct rebates to customers. So we really have to thank them as well.
So what has been the uptick? I know this is a new program, brand new. It just launched here in December, but our business is looking into this. Are you getting a lot of enthusiasm?
Yes, a lot of enthusiasm, thanks to Governor Snyder. We had a lot of media generated from that event at Hiller's, and as a result, the phones are ringing off the hook. We're fortunate to have a person, his name is Todd O'Grady, he works for us, and he is full-time dedicated to answering calls and responding to business owners that want to get involved and holding their hand, along with the contractors. So you should really get on our website, MichiganSaves.org. There's a simple online form you can fill out, and Todd will call you right away and get you started.
Well, that website again is MichiganSaves, all one word, .org. I've been talking with Julie Mehdi Bennett, who is the Senior Vice President for Public Sector Consultants, and she is also the Executive Director of Michigan Saves. Julie, so nice to meet you, and congratulations on this new program.
Thank you. One thing I did want to mention is we're running a special right now for folks in the food industry. That's grocery stores, convenience stores, restaurants, food wholesalers. We're offering a low interest rate of 3.99%, so lower than our typical low rate. And if you are able to get 20% reduction in your energy consumption, we'll give you $2,000 cash back. So
wow.
That's a limited time offer, so hurry and get to our website and give us a call.
Okay, a limited time offer. Get to that website. Those are amazing savings, plus 20% energy savings, $2,000 in cash.
That's right.
Julie, thanks so much for being on Greening of the Great Lakes.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been great.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Find more online at greeningofthegreatlakes.com.
I'm Scott Westerman from the Michigan State University Alumni Association with another observation from The Spartan Life. The key, says Stephen Covey, is not in spending time, but investing it. You are a person of value. Your quality time is limited, so it's essential that you invest most of it in people who appreciate and reciprocate. Keith Ferrazzi tells us that the only true way to get a return on a relationship investment is to Give without the expectation of return. That's great advice. But it's also true that your own soul must have nourishment if it is to have the strength to make a difference in the world. So make sure your portfolio of friends has more than a few reciprocators in it. Our lives are filled with transactional relationships. We pay for something, they provide it, and that's the end of the transaction. People mumble, "Thanks for your business and have a great day," after we've handed over the cash and they hand over the hamburgers, but they don't really mean it. That's not reciprocation. The places we return to, time and again, are populated with authentic souls who genuinely are interested in us, who are proactive in their interactions, who make us feel like what we do for them really means something, who reflect back the positive energy we try to share, even on the rare occasions when our own energy level is low. This is reciprocation. Reciprocation does not always mean appreciation. The best feedback is honest feedback. Sometimes that hurts. But if it comes from a place of affection, you will ultimately be glad you got it. One of my all-time most popular Monday motivators talks about the importance of de-emphasizing unfulfilling relationships and prioritizing people who care. This is a key to personal growth and chasing happiness. Treat everyone as you want to be treated, but over the long haul, don't invest in people who don't appreciate it. It's okay to give without expecting a return, but not all the time. Long-term relationships don't work if you're the only one who is doing the heavy lifting. People who don't reciprocate aren't necessarily bad people. They may have something going on inside that you don't know about. They may have other priorities, or they might just not be that into you. That's okay. If it feels like a temporary thing, hang in there. If it's a pattern, let him go. You will get some time back to spend on someone else who appreciates you. I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. Learn more about Spartans Helping Spartans at alumni.msu.edu.
MSU Ag Bio Research is changing the face of science.
People should know that Ag Bio Research is really the first front at MSU dealing with environmental issues and natural resources issues.
Dr. Steve Papke leads MSU Ag Bio Research. More than 300 scientists from six MSU colleges are leading innovation in food, natural resources, and energy.
MSU Ag Bio Research really is changing the face of science. If we can do that right, we create economic opportunities here in Michigan and opportunities for our researchers to make some really interesting discoveries.
Our goal is to generate economic prosperity, sustain natural resources, and enhance the quality of life for all.
We're MSU Ag Bio Research.
Visit agbioresearch.msu.edu. MSU Ag Bio Research is changing the face of science.
I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. Whether you're moving across town or across the country, relocating to a new job or a new city is always a challenge. When you join the MSU Alumni Association family, wherever you go, you'll have an instant circle of friends on hand to help you get settled and get connected. With more than 100 clubs and affiliates around the world, there's a Spartan in just about every city. And as an MSU Alumni Association member, you'll quickly feel right at home. Wherever you go, community, connections, careers, and class, four great reasons to visit alumni.msu.edu today to activate your membership in the largest Spartan organization in the world. That's alumni.msu.edu, the Michigan State University Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Visit us online at spartanpodcast.com.
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Please visit us online at spartanpodcast.com and join us every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.